I'm really worried.
About what?
Artificial intelligence. I'm afraid it's going to replace us on our podcast.
How so?
Think about it. It doesn't require any pay. It doesn't need knowledge or any specialized training to do the job. It can say in 30 flowery sentences what can be said in 5.
Oh, relax. Why would you need a replacement? You just described us.
Actually, don't relax, because I'm here to announce ChatGPT's newest model. Astonishingly designed to be your favorite old foreign film buff. Fully equipped with lost trains of thought, meandering sentences, and specializing, of course, in the bafflingly niche world of festive foreign Christmas movies. It rambles, it hesitates, it insists every obscure Scandinavian holiday flick is a masterpiece, and somehow perfectly captures the charm of a man who forgets what they were saying mid-sentence. We give you ChatGPT 5F. ChatGPT's proprietary festive foreign film fanatic firmware. Version 1.0 coming to you in Q4 2025.
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Good news! Bring it to mine!
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! We are the Wild and Crazy Guys!
But they're both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
And we are the festive foreign film fans! Mark! It's spooky season.
It is spooky season.
Oh, Mark, can you tell? Look, I decorated the studio. What do you think?
You know what? I think you maybe went a little overboard on the steam. I can barely see you.
I know. You got your pumpkin head on and I can't see you. Can you turn that candle on?
Bob, I just have a candle stuck out my mouth.
Oh, I get it. And the jagged tooth. I see that. That's great. You know, the funny thing was, I was out there and I tried to give Jake some vampire teeth, but he didn't need them. He showed me he has his own.
I knew it.
That explains those red shakes that he has in his late hours here.
I've never seen Jake's car outside before sundown.
He just flies out the window. Since we are in October and Halloween season, we kind of did a little bit of a detour. We are doing Christmas movies, but they are spooky ones.
I am so excited and scared.
You know what? I know we're a Christmas podcast, but we thought we should embrace Halloween. And the reason why we should, Mark, it has international roots. Did you know that?
I thought it was just Charlie Brown who created it.
I got a rock.
Exactly.
What is funny about that is most people around the world will say trick-or-treating, it's totally an American thing. But when you trace back where it all came from, we go back to where? The pagans. You know, those people were probably the best to party with because they came up with these festivals. My gosh. So they had these celebrations for the dead in the fall. And fall, it gets dark. You know, you got to have bonfires, that big full moon. They start dancing in the moonlight and feasting away. Just grew into, now let's go around and gather candy from our neighbors.
And scare people.
It started, and this is important because of your heritage. We must honor your heritage whenever we can.
My pagan heritage?
That's Sue's, that wild woman. No. The Celtic. Halloween evolved from that Celtic festival of Samhain. Now, whenever I look at it, and I had to practice saying this again, because I look at it and it looks like Samhain, but I know it's Samhain. And it was a celebration to welcome the harvest at the end of the summer. Irish people, they would light bonfires and they would wear costumes, but the costumes was to scare off the spirits that would be attracted to the bonfires in the dark. Even the traditional Halloween colors, even orange and black, come from Samhain. Don't you love how we just get so much education by this podcast?
Hope someday to use this education.
So, yes, when you come walking down the stairs in your orange or black outfit and you say, honey, I'm in my Samhain colors. I'm feeling a bit Samhain. The orange and the black were supposed to represent the autumn harvest colors. Right. But then there's also, and this has really grown in America, at least I would say in the last 20 years, Day of the Dead. Now you go to Target and on the $1 aisle, they have half the stuff is Day of the Dead. It's a Mexican holiday where families welcome back the souls of their deceased relatives. The idea is you welcome them back. You can have a drink with them, celebration, food. It's your chance to see your relatives once again. It's recognized in Mexico, but it was a Mayan ritual that brought together the Mayans, the Europeans who had come there, and the Spaniards. All of their cultures mixed together to create this Day of the Dead. For our purpose, since we like to cover festive movies, and this is where we do call on your vocal talents, Coco. Have you seen the movie Coco, Disney's Coco?
Remember me. Into our podcast, remember me. Butchered words won't make you cry. For even when we're far away, learning new traditions, I say a secret song to you in hopes you'll still listen.
Oh my
goodness. Remember me.
You're making me cry. And it's not because how good your singing is.
I'm sure it's not. No one has said to me ever.
Disney's Coco was a great, great film. And we really got to see the elements of Day of the Dead in that movie. Before we get to tonight's 4F Fright Film Fest, we need to return once more to a land that is still haunted by the dark, ghostly echoes of its history, South Africa. Last episode, we asked a very straightforward question as a means to release one of our bound and captive stickers. Well, if you knew that South Africans call traffic lights robots, you have earned yourself a newly freed and fiercely independent sticky friend for life. The early traffic lights in South Africa were originally called robot policemen, but the name got shortened over time. And if you don't obey those robots, you might encounter a human cop, which can be much scarier. If that isn't frightening, we will move on to this month's holiday treat. It's a treat in some ways because we didn't have subtitles either. Although, like we had a conversation last episode, I think I'm not minding the subtitles, but it was kind of interesting. You didn't have to worry about it because we decided to travel up north to Canada. We're just crossing the border to Canada. We might have some people who would say, well, you were there before. You went to Quebec. And I will say, yes, that's true. And there will probably be in the future other regional places because I'd like to see Newfoundland if they have a Christmas movie. I already have one from Catalan in Spain. So we will have some other regional ones. And we might actually do a regional one in the States. Who knows? But now this is to represent all of the country. It's also unusual. The only other one that was this old was the other Canadian film that we watched, because this film is from 1974.
Mon Oncle Antoine?
Yeah, I think that one was also a 70s film. And this one as well, it kind of, in fun ways, was so 70s. The clothes were 70s. The posters were 70s, which made it so fun. And what is interesting about this film, this is called Black Christmas, this debuted 5 years before Halloween. So people will say this is a precursor for those slasher films because one of the unique things that this film does that wasn't common, at various points you see the point of view of the slasher, of the person who you don't know who it is. And that was an unusual technique. It became very popular. But the other funny thing for us from a Christmas podcast is the director.
Right.
The director of Black Christmas, which when you watch this movie, you can't even believe it, is Bob Clark, who did Christmas Story. And he did Christmas Story maybe it was 8 years later. So he goes from slasher film to Christmas Story with Ralphie and his Red Rider. And the one thing I will say that reminded me of Bob Clark, it's a slasher movie. It is a horror movie, but there are elements of humor in there that he injects. And I didn't know if it's to just lift the mood or he just was having a good time. But it's funny because there's dead people and then there's like these jokes. Let's get into it. Put on our parka. We'll head north across the border where there's Christmas prank calls, sexual tension, and some sorority girl slangs.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Our actors, the first, she plays Jess Bradford, and the actress's name is Olivia Hussey. Now, Olivia was born in Argentina. This is a movie that was filmed in Canada with Canadian actors, but there isn't much of a Canadian accent. She has an accent, but it's not a Canadian accent. Yeah. It's kind of British. I suppose the college might have looked a little Canadian, but it could have been an East Coast school as well. Olivia Hussey, born in Argentina. Her father was an opera singer, so he was famous, and her mother was English and Scottish. And so at seven, she moved to England, where she appeared, this is at seven, on the London stage with Vanessa Redgrave in the prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Then she played Juliet in Franco Zeffirelli's Romeo and Juliet. I don't know about you, but we had to watch that in high school with the controversial nude scene. Yes, I know. And here, this was only her third film, and she won a Golden Globe and two Best Actor Donatello Awards, which is Italy's Oscars, because it was an Italian film. And she has appeared in dozens of films all around the world, English, Spanish, and Japanese.
I love her. I would love to meet her when she was younger. She played Mother Teresa. She played...
Oh, I didn't even know that.
When she was older. Yeah. She also played Mary, the mother of Jesus, in Jesus of Nazareth. Her repertoire is incredible. This is just an all-star cast.
Now, Keir Dullea, he played Peter Smythe. Keir, he's the boyfriend in here. And it was hard to pick. Do we talk about Keir or do we talk about the detective? Because he's very well known. The only thing that's interesting about Keir is... is he the killer or not? And that's why we should talk about him. So he was born in Cleveland, Ohio. So he's American. He was raised in Greenwich Village. He has kind of an interesting background. His parents ran a progressive bookstore. His first break, he made his debut and he kind of played these like troubled youth characters. He was like a hoodlum. Then he played a mentally ill adolescent, a murderous army private, an incestuous brother.
Wow.
And but what people would recognize him from, if they don't recognize him from Black Christmas, is in a 2001 Space Odyssey. He's Dr. David Bowen. And he's continued to appear in movies. So think about this. He was in 1974. He's in Black Christmas. He was just recently in the Paramount Plus TV series Halo. So he continues to act. And then, of course, the most well-known to me in this is Margot Kidder. She plays Barb here, and Barb is quite the interesting character. Margot Kidder is born in Yellowknife, the only city in the Northwest Territories of Canada. At an early age, she got the acting bug, but she also had mental health issues at a young age. And as we all know, those also surfaced later on in her life. When she was a child, she had a bipolar disorder that was never diagnosed. People didn't know. And at age 14, she tried to kill herself. She was unsuccessful, obviously, went on to college. She started her film career, her first film, Sisters. She got a lot of attention. And so then she was in a string of popular movies. When she was in Black Christmas, she won the Canadian Film Award for Best Actress in this film. And then, of course, she landed the best-known role as Lois Lane in Superman. She was in all the sequels, but she also tried to appear in other movies so she didn't get pigeonholed just as Lois Lane. Then, in 1990, she was in a horrible accident, and she's temporarily paralyzed. After that accident, in 1996, she has this manic episode that I think we all heard about, and unfortunately was covered in People magazine in such detail. And she had left her home, faked her death, and altered her appearance. She was clearly having a manic breakdown. She got treatment. She did return to movies, but then she died in 2018 by suicide.
Yeah. Great actress. I love her role in this. Kind of the party girl and sort of take no crap from no one, which is sort of like her Lois Lane role a little bit.
Yeah. You know who else was in this? And it was so distracting to me, from Second City Television.
The woman who played Phil?
Yes. And she was with John Candy and yes. Eugene Levy, and she's a comedian, right? And here she's a straight character, but I kept looking at her going, oh my gosh, I can't believe she's in this film.
We digress.
Yeah, we do. The movie is kind of contained. There's not a lot of characters because pretty much all the action takes place in a sorority house, and these are all sorority sisters. So it's Black Christmas. As we indicated, it looks very 1970s. It starts with the girls in the sorority house are getting obscene phone calls, which also seemed dated to me. Didn't it to you? Remember back in the day, that was a big thing. And yep. Guess on your cell phones, it just doesn't happen anymore.
Especially now that you have caller ID yeah, and all your phones.
The other Bob Clark element, you see this a couple of times, is Christmas music playing during the murder scenes. So it's always in the background. You have the girls. They're getting these obscene phone calls, and someone is climbing up on the outside of the sorority house and going into the attic. So you know something creepy is going on. The decorations to the house are so 70s too. The blue star, the red wreath.
I mean, what made the movie attractive,
yeah.
That resonated with me as someone who grew up in the 70s.
Yeah. And one of the themes in this is, hey, we're kind of going through the sexual revolution, but the parents aren't there yet.
Right.
They're all getting ready to leave for Christmas break. And we start to learn about a few of the girls. We see some of them and their boyfriends. Claire, she's there, and the obscene phone call comes in. Margot Kidder's character, Barb, answers the phone. What is interesting to me is oftentimes when there's obscene phone calls, you don't hear what's being said. In this movie, not only do you hear, but this individual's doing voices. It's very clear some of the things he's saying. Like, we know his name is Billy. There was Agnes. That was Agnes the baby, and then Agnes that went missing, and then what are you doing to Agnes? There was some episode with Billy and Agnes that happened. I mean, you hear some filth in there,
yeah.
But you also hear he's clearly playing different characters. So that was unusual as well, but
right.
Barb is the tough Lois Lane character.
Exactly.
So she's kind of saying stuff to him and not reacting to the filthy things he's saying. Claire's the girl that's kind of, hey, you shouldn't provoke him. That's right. Not a good idea. Goes up to get ready to go home. She's leaving the next day, and someone's in her closet and suffocates her and puts her up in the attic in a rocking chair, which in many ways, if you've ever seen posters for this film, it's the iconic image of her rocking with the plastic over her face. And we get to see the house mother who, what I find so funny is, you know, you have some really good acting, then some overacting,
oh,
and
my.
She is way over the top between the drinking the sherry, and they give her a Christmas gift of a house coat, and you can tell she absolutely hates it, and
yeah.
She can't wait to get the girls out of the room so she can drink alcohol.
Her character was my least favorite.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's just too much.
And it then is.
The next day, Claire's father shows up to pick her up, and she doesn't show. And he starts looking and asking around, and everybody says, hey, I didn't see her this morning. We're doing a fundraiser at a fraternity. Go there. And when they show the scene, you have Santa swearing his head off with a kid on his lap.
Right.
Barb is giving alcohol to the kids. And this father is played as like a straight arrow. And one of the funniest things is he's obviously distressed about his daughter and speaking to the house mom in his daughter's room, and there's a poster of a peace sign made up of these two bodies making love.
Yep.
The house mother's trying to hide
cover it
from
up, yeah.
Because he's like, I didn't send my daughter here to drink and see boys.
Yeah, Claire's dad was a very typical 70s dad.
So Jess, Olivia Hussey, who's kind of the principal actress in this film, and she is pregnant. She tells her boyfriend, Peter, he's a
doctorate student, wasn't he?
Yeah. His final is a recital. And she tells him right before the recital, he wants to keep the baby, but he throws a fit. She doesn't want to keep the baby. She doesn't. And then he goes forward with his recital, and you can see the stress. He's sweating.
I thought the director did an interesting thing there. At least I think he did. In that heated conversation about the baby and keeping it, Peter says to her, well, you can't make a decision without me about keeping the baby.
Yeah.
And I thought, film in 74, Roe v. Wade would have been just maybe less than 2 years old. I just wonder if he was trying to bring out the aspect of that time and period. I mean, this is one of the reasons why it was passed, to give women access and have it their decision. So maybe it was a historical contextual thing, or maybe it's just coincidence, but Peter's so animate to say, this is my decision as much as it is yours.
Well, and what I thought about that actually was kind of, it was progressive, that they recognize that both parties should have a say in the child, so that it shouldn't be solely his decision, but I think it should be a joint decision. And typically that wasn't maybe portrayed like that. Also, during this period, while we're learning these things, it also comes out that there's a high school girl missing. The police are not real apt to follow up on Claire's missing, because they say these college girls disappear and go away for weekends with their boyfriends, which also the father hated to hear. It's like, you're not making me feel any better. Exactly. So once Claire's boyfriend finds out, he seems to have a relationship with a detective at the police station, goes in there, throws a fit, and they say, hey, you know, we better take this serious. There's a high school girl who might be missing. Now there's this other girl missing. In the meantime, house mother is going to leave, has called a cab. She's going, but she hears the kitty up in the attic and wonders how the kitty got up in the attic, and decides to climb up in the attic.
Don't go in the attic.
You never go in the attic by yourself.
Never.
And the killer is up in the attic, and there's a hook. A lot of this is these editing cuts. Right when she screams, then there's the taxi cab driver yelling, and it goes into itself. It's really good. So now the house mom is killed, and there are elements in the film that are pointing towards Peter, the boyfriend, where he is fighting Jess, and he says, you can't get rid of the baby like you would a wart.
Right.
And at one of the phone calls, the killer says that exact phrase.
Yep.
And it even shakes up Jess a bit. You see the killer, when he's climbing, you can see his hands. You can tell he's young. There is one scene, Barb is drunk, making kind of a fool of herself, sent to bed. At first, she gets up and she's upset. You have seen the killer go into her room.
Right.
You think she's dead. She's not. She is having an asthma attack. But later on, he does attack her with one of her little figurines that she has. It's horrible. But when he's stabbing her, you kind of get a brief glimpse of his face.
Oh, the profile.
So they're building up these elements that it seems like it's Peter. And even the detective who's now involved, Peter brushes by him.
Right.
Detective says, who is this guy?
Right.
And there is a point where we know that Mrs. Mack has been killed. We know that Barb has been killed, and Peter comes down from the upstairs. He had been waiting for Jess, and he said, I went upstairs and took a nap.
Right.
And we know that there was another murder in the house, and it just seemed odd that he would be sleeping up there and not here. So detectives involved. Then he discovers that they are receiving obscene phone calls, and they had made a report to the cop at the desk, and he's kind of played for, he's a comic foil.
The death sergeant does not show well.
They have a really funny joke with the phone number. Yeah, he does not show well. And one of the things, he didn't give them the information that the house, they'd be getting obscene phone calls. And the detective points out to him, we have one missing girl. We have a high schooler who's also missing. Or at that point, I think they had found her.
They did. Yeah,
they had found her. Dead. They had sent out a search party, found that she had been killed. We have a high schooler who's been killed. Girl missing, and you don't tell us that this house where the girl's missing from is getting obscene phone calls. And he's like, yeah, sorry. Oops. Yeah,
details. Oops.
So they decide to trace the calls. So now it's pretty much down to Jess and Barb?
Phil.
No, yeah, Jess and Phil.
Right.
It's down to Jess and Phil, pretty much the only ones left in the house. They do some typical, there's a search party out, and the guys come to the door, and they think it's a murder, and it's not. And they're kind of played for laughs, too.
Kind of like, what was that show where it was my brother and my other brother?
Like Newhart. Yeah, that's what Newhart. They exactly. were like that. They really were. They were like goofy.
Daryl, my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl.
My other brother Daryl. So they're trying to keep the obscene caller on the phone long enough so they can trace the call. And at one point, Phil goes upstairs and goes into Barb's room, and obviously we can see that she's attacked as well. So now we got Jess left in the house. Jess. There is a cop that's outside that's guarding them. When she finally gets the obscene phone caller on the phone long enough, they're able to trace it. And I always thought that this trope occurred in a movie I saw called When a Stranger Calls, where they say the caller is in the house. But that came after this. Right. I don't know if this was the first instance of it, but it's this thing where when they finally trace the call, they're like, you're getting the obscene phone calls from inside the house because the house mom has a phone that's a separate line. So detective assumes that the police officer is guarding, calls him on the radio. They show him, his throat's been slit, and he tells the sergeant, call Jess, don't tell her that the killer's in the house, just tell her to go out the door. Now, in this instance, I probably would have done the same thing, but he calls her up and he's very calm and he asks where the other girls are and she's like, they're upstairs. And he's like, well, just walk out the door. And she's like, well, I'm going to go get the other. No, no, no. Don't go upstairs. Just walk out. And then he loses it and starts screaming, the killer's in the house. Get out. Get out. So she, of course, rushes up the stairs to try to save her friend so they could get out, opens the door. They're posed together. The two of them, she rushes out. Now, we don't see, and I'm not sure if she sees him or not, because she doesn't show any kind of recognition or anything. He grabs her foot, but she's trying to get out. Can't get out the front door because they've locked it.
Right.
So he's coming down the stairs, and so she rushes behind the door, which is to the basement, locks the door. And luckily, this is a big old house because he can't bash that door. He's violently going against the door, and I'm thinking, my doors would have come flying off the hinges,
absolutely.
But this one held. So she's in the basement, locked in, and she has a poker. Someone's sneaking around outside because you hear the killer go outside. And then someone's outside, and it's Peter. Right. And he's like, hey, Jess, is that you? And she's totally freaked out. And he breaks the glass, and he comes inside to get to her. And she obviously thinks that he's going to attack her, murder. And so when the detective gets there and they rush down, they find that Jess has killed Peter. And they think, okay, detective says, I thought it was him all the way along. And one of the cops says he's going to stay with her. They have so many bodies they have to take to the morgue to another city because they don't have enough room. And I just thought this was funny because then the father of Claire collapses and he's in shock. And so the cop who's supposed to be watching her says, you know, we got to take him to the hospital. So basically everybody leaves. They all leave her tranquilized on the bed. And Bob Clark kept doing these harp strings. Zing, zing,
exactly.
Zing. So you get that. And you're getting that like each room they're showing. And so clearly Peter wasn't the killer because you hear the voices and that killer is still in the house. And they show up in the attic. What I didn't realize is they haven't found Mrs. Mack or Claire yet.
No.
They're still up in the attic. And so is the killer.
Right.
This is Billy. Don't hurt the baby.
Don't hurt the baby.
This is Billy. I'm just Billy.
You do that really well. Just don't call me late one night. So that is Black Christmas. It was a ride. It was fun. It was a fun flashback. But Mark, is it festive?
Yeah. I mean, it passes my test.
Really?
I think so. I mean, I think there's a Christmas element to it, right? I mean, people are getting away for the holidays. The backdrop of Christmas allows this to happen because they're excusing the absences. Like they're getting ready for the holidays.
That's the diehard test. Yeah. We wouldn't have an empty building if it wasn't Christmas Eve.
That's right. Exactly. And so I think I would put it as festive.
Wow. Cause I was gonna say Christmas definitely is in there and it is a total backdrop. They give gifts.
Yeah.
They're celebrating. Yeah. They're talking about it. Barb gets in a fight with her mom because her mom's dumping her to go with her boyfriend. And I love this. A caroling group comes to the door,
right.
Which I'm laughing. Now, they did kind of handle it, but who's going to have their kids out caroling when they find a dead high school in the park? But I don't think they knew, because then the woman comes up and goes, you got to get home. You got to get home. All right. I believe that Die Hard's a Christmas movie. So I'm going to swoop this one in and say, yes, it is true. So how did it make you feel?
I mean, it was stressful. Think about the 80s, 90s. So much it was blood and gore and heads falling off and stuff like that. Like, not showing me things freaks me out more than showing me things, because I'm left to my own imagination. And so, like, felt the horror, the stress, the anticipation. I'm not going to lie, there's a few times when I'd say to the house mom, why are you going to the attic? Like, she could hear me. So,
I was saying, why are you drinking that bottle of sherry that you just pull out of the toilet?
Good point.
I hope this doesn't sound bad. I enjoyed this film. All the different things. Yeah, it was scary. And I agree with you. I hate the excess gore. I hate the fake jump scares once in a while. But when they do it every 5 minutes, this was tame compared to that. So it's much more enjoyable. I like it was a throwback. It had funny elements.
It did.
That were meant to be funny, some that were not meant to be funny, but because of the timing now is funny. And then it did have some scares. So altogether, I just enjoyed it.
It's a classic movie.
Yeah. Had you seen it before? That's a question.
I had not.
Okay. I had. So I had seen it before, but it had been a long time. So the question is, would you watch it in the future? And I thought, you know what? I probably would. Now, I think we talked about this with one of the other films. I'm not necessarily going to pop it in every year. This is not one of those. But this is one of those ones that I might stumble on 5, 6, 8 years later and go, oh, yeah, Black Christmas. I forgot about this one. Let's watch this one, you know?
Would you watch it during October or December?
I think you could do either one. I really do. I appreciate the Christmas element. Yeah, I could watch this in October easily.
Yeah. I like a good old-fashioned horror movie. I'd probably watch it more towards Halloween horror time. Mm-hmm. I would recommend this.
Yeah, and maybe, I don't know if it's the stage of my life or, you know, when you start saying have grandkids, I'm much more inclined to go the more tamer.
Yeah.
I don't need to see ripping people's guts out and stuff. No. I just don't. Would you recommend it to someone?
Yeah, I would.
And you know what? What's interesting, like you said, I might recommend someone like your films that you pull out for Halloween. That's where I might recommend it more so than let's get the family around with the eggnog and watch the slasher movie.
That's right. Exactly. But it was good.
And so now you're saying, let's see, last time we were in Quebec, we learned how to say the Inuit tribe in Canada. How are we going to say Merry Christmas here in Canadian when they speak English?
Yeah.
So
you worked hard on this one, didn't you?
Yes, exactly. In 2023, they did a survey of Canadians, Mark, and they asked them, what was their most common holiday greeting? And guess what won?
Merry Christmas?
Yes, Mark. God, you pulled that right out of your head?
Out of somewhere.
Yes. Of all the 13 territories in Canada, 9 of them said Merry Christmas was the most popular. But in British Columbia, Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island, and Quebec, they say Happy Christmas. So just so you know, carry this sheet around with you. So when you cross the border, when you go from Prince Edward Island and you're heading towards Ontario, make sure you're saying the proper thing.
But go from merry to happy, happy to merry.
But the other thing that was funny with the survey is what else people will say. Some of the other popular ones. Yes. Enjoy the time off. Enjoy your winter's holidays. Happy solstice. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Season's greetings. Happy Christmas. Oh, we did. Joyous Noel. Enjoy your temps de fêtes. Which is, I can't remember what that is.
I took Spanish.
There's many different ways.
Many different ways.
But I would say, enjoy your time off.
What a warm feeling I get when you say that to me.
And customs? Some customs from Canada?
Yes.
Now, you would think, hey, they're so close. They're neighbors. We share so much in common. Are there customs that we don't know about? I found there were a lot of things that I didn't know. First off, did you know that Canada has awarded citizen status to Santa? The Minister of Citizenship, Immigration, and Multiculturalism, They actually awarded him citizen's status because they say, look, his red and white attire matches their flag colors. The NORAD Santa tracker always shows his trip beginning in the Canadian Arctic. International law says that no country has dominion over the North Pole, but Canada has officially said Santa is legally to be considered a Canadian, and they even issued a passport to him and to Mrs. Claus, and it says, the government of Canada wishes Santa the very best in his Christmas Eve duties and wants to let him know that he has the automatic right to re-enter Canada once his trip around the world is complete. So when your grandchildren pull up next to you and they say, Papa Gigi, where's Santa? Where is he from? You can say he's Canadian.
Canadian. I would typically say Turkey, but okay.
And that's why he's so kind, eh? So nice. And also, Santa, because of the fact that he's an official citizen of Canada, they have reserved their postal code. Now, theirs is different than the U.S. We only, for our code, our zip codes are numbers, but they have letters and numbers. So what they did is they took the H and then the zero, and they H-O-H-O-H-O. So the postal code spells out ho, ho, ho. It's so popular that they get 1 million letters addressed to Santa Claus sent, and that's each Christmas, 1 million letters sent using ho, ho, ho as the zip code. And many of them come from outside of Canada. And because this is so important to them, if you send them a letter, generally you'll get a reply. They have people that will take basket letters to respond.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Maybe I can do that in retirement.
There you go. You better start. You got a million to go. And of course, this, we know that as much as we want to believe that the Hallmark Christmas films are true Americana, no. This is in 2022. 35 Hallmark Christmas films were shot in Canada. In Ottawa alone, 16 Christmas movies were shot there. Wow. And if you go to Ottawa, they'll give you a map to show you all the Hallmark destinations you can go to.
That would be fantastic. Oh, Bob, we have to do this.
We do.
We have to do this. It's like objectives. Like,
yeah, it's right? Like our brew tour. We have to check off. We've been to all the locations.
Oh, my God.
Look, it's Mark and I at the romantic snowman building place. We're in a snowball fight.
Well, now that you described it, maybe not.
Well, and they say that the reason why Canada is the best place for these movies because it has the ideal romantic backdrop, urban cityscapes, rolling prairies, forests, mountains, and charming small towns, which I thought we had in America, but I guess we don't. What I love about this is that it has become an industry there. A Canadian industry. So now they have built studios, facilities for the editing and the sound and costume houses, crews, hotels, specialty equipment rentals. So, and they say around 50 million viewers watch at least part of one Hallmark movie each season. And the demographic is mostly women ages 25 to 54. But this is the most ironic thing. The Hallmark Network is not available in Canada. You can get the Hallmark Channel, but you know, Hallmark has a whole
slew of networks.
And you can't get that in Canada.
It's insane.
Because they live it. That's why they live every day.
You know, Bob, you know, this makes me think though. So we got to go there, got to do our objectives. But if we hang around long enough, what about being an extra in some of the movies? I mean, with faces like ours and incredible, impeccable personalities and wit and humor and intelligence. Oh, my God.
And can you imagine all those women from like age 26 to 54 going, wait, aren't those the festive fans back there?
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, Hallmark would pay us millions.
I think we'd be getting fan mail to the ho, ho, ho.
You know, I mean, I've always loved Canada, but I'm really emotionally attached to them tonight.
Yeah, I think me too.
Yeah.
Just to avoid sorority houses.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
We
least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Do they have music? They have music in Canada, Bob?
Mark, they do have music in Canada. Playing in the snow like it fell to the ground for us. I know that I should be at home. Mom and dad are blowing up my phone, but over there I see a mistletoe. One kiss, so before I go, yeah. Da 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 da. This Christmas is me and you. Da 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 da. This Christmas is me and you. Okay, Mark, so this song is called It's Me and You This Christmas by Elijah Woods and Jamie Fine. Picking a song for Canada was really hard because they have some really classic Absolutely. Christmas songs. I mean, Joni Mitchell's River, although there are people that say, oh, that's not a Christmas song. But I mean, to me, it is. And it's so Canadian. But there's also Justin Bieber's Mistletoe, Bryan Adams' Christmas Time. But I kind of think one of the things we do is try to find other right. songs. I think everybody has heard those songs before. And they were a little bit slower in the way you move around here after the belly dancer from your son's wedding. You can move. So we picked the songs from 2018. Now, what's funny is when you say Elijah Woods, people might think of Elijah Wood, the actor. It's not him. It's Woods. It's with an S and Jamie Fine. They were discovered on The Launch, which is Canada's The Voice. They became one of the best-selling artists of the year. They had three consecutive gold singles. They released this, and now they've parted ways. But fun song.
Very fun. Yeah. This is the kind of song where I'll probably be singing like,
it's me and you. It's Christmas.
I mean, I love
So Mark, yes. That's where we'll be in the background of that Hallmark movie, and you'll be singing that, and I'll be pointing at us, you know?
Yeah.
It's me and you. And
I'm telling you.
They're not going to be looking at those hunks in the front. They want to see who are those.
This movie and this whole Canadian background stuff has altered my thinking for what my next steps are.
And you keep growing that beard out, maybe, you know.
They might and think. My belly from all this food I'm eating.
It's Christmas dinner. Eat it, eat it,
eat it, eat it. Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas. Eat
it. What's up, food for Santa? Eat it. If
it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food. Have a banana. Have a
So... my most recent effort in this year-long quest to create the beloved national food and star of the Latvian holiday table, the pierogi, was to try to find a source to purchase them online, Mark. I mean, I was thinking that before we can cook them, we might try to taste them first. I mean, we don't have that benefit of growing up with pierogi, so I fear that our effort will be kind of formulaic. We're not chasing a memory or trying to recreate an experience here. I mean, we'll follow the directions, we'll measure the ingredients and use all the recommended methods for mixing, kneading, and baking. But I think it'll be missing those flavors and secrets found in grandma's closely guarded family recipe passed down through the generations. Since our research has shown that making pierogi was very ceremonial, I mean, the act of folding and pinching the dough was said to seal in good fortune for the household. I figured that it's pretty hard to perfect a dish if you don't have a benchmark to measure against it. How are we going to replicate something in our own kitchens if we haven't tried it in others, right? To be honest about it, really, though, I'm just getting tired of talking, and I was more interested in tasting because I'm that hungry. My first efforts didn't prove very successful. To purchase pierogi online is not like mere shopping. It's more like an odyssey. My initial thought was Amazon, right? Because, it's Amazon. You know, they figure they have everything. So I did some quick scrolling, and I used the term pierogi, and I hit pay dirt. There was pierogi everywhere, and I made some quick purchases. So I got a Pierogi Squad t-shirt. I bought a Pierogi Breakfast for Latvians tumbler. There was a Welcome to Pierogi Country hoodie and a Peace, Love, and Pierogi tote bag. I even procured the classic I'm Just Here for the Pierogi phone cover and Keep Calm and Eat Pierogi coaster. What I wasn't able to find was the actual pierogies. These old world foodstuffs don't seem to lend themselves to the general merchandise of online's largest retailer. So then my next thought was, okay, let's go to a gourmet website, right? They always seem to have foods with names that you can't pronounce from countries where you'd never go. So I visited websites like McKenzie Limited, Regalis, La Gourmet Central, Pittman and Davis, Verve Culture, GourmetFoodStore.com, iGourmet, and Gourmanity. Each cert result turned up empty. Williams and Sonoma, they had arancini, bobolini, spumoni, but no baragi. It seems that gourmet does not seem to include comfort food. What I realize is that if you don't have a la or a lay in front of it, or you don't associate it with words like artisanal, organic, or hand foraged, and it's not meant to impress your guests, then it is not a dish found in the gourmet section. No matter if we took our pierogi and put it on a porcelain plate with a drizzle of balsamic reduction, it still wouldn't matter. It's comfort food, which is meant to fill your stomach and your soul. So then I thought, okay, let's go to a specialty grocery store. That might help, right? So I scoured Trader Joe's and Whole Foods without success. No sighting of our little pillowy golden bundles of bacon and onion stuffed happiness. Specialty food stores are supposed to carry special things, right? The truth is, special really just means store-bought special. In fact, not being found in a specialty food store just might prove how unique it really is. Maybe pierogi are too homegrown to be commodities, so you can't just buy them anywhere. So finally, I'm like, okay, where else? Online ethnic sites. So I went to Lot Food, EasternEuropeanFoods.com, and Baltic Food. I even visited a world market, and that was a trip without going anywhere. Still, I ended up empty-handed. Even those regional or local sites with Latvian in the name were fruitless. But does this mean that we have given up? Not at all. What this means is pierogies are deeply local and mostly homemade. This is a dish that was never meant to be mass-produced. This is a food that is too personal to be made in a factory. It has to be made in a kitchen, and we're going to fight on.
It's trivia. It's
trivia. Trivia. Can we find Canadian trivia? Is there something that we don't know? Thought about the fact that Canada consumes the most donuts and eats the most macaroni and cheese in the world.
Fascinating.
Exactly.
Fascinating.
This one I like. They invented the Hawaiian pizza there in 1962. I am one of those Hawaiian pizza fans. I'm sorry. I am. I will eat pineapple on my pizzas. Or how about in World War II, they treated the POWs so nicely that the prisoners didn't want to leave Canada after they were released.
I don't know how to react to that.
They're nice people, Mark.
They are nice people.
Look, it's the ideal romantic landscape or whatever it is. It has urban and small town charm. I wouldn't want to leave either. And then finally, the 7,300 maple syrup producers in Canada, they have a cartel like OPEC. So they control 77% of the maple syrup produced in the world. So just think, if we could have a maple syrup crisis like we had the energy crisis, and we'd be lines at the grocery store trying to buy our syrup. We got to keep them on our good side.
I think so.
What we are going to ask about is, there is a certain unique condition found in the Hudson Bay that makes it unlike any other place on the planet. Something about that area that is so unusual that you won't find it anywhere else. Do you know? If you do, you drop us a note, you'll get a free sticker, and you have until next episode to get it.
I have to think about this one.
So, Mark, I love this quote. This is really one of my favorite quotes. Pagan holiday, Jewish baby, and Roman Empire, the union of ideas, emotions, and a reason to celebrate is the real story of Christmas Day. And that's by Haxan Floyn.
That's an awesome quote. I've never heard that one before.
Neither have I, but it brings us all together in one big cuddle hug. And next episode, we continue with our I'm Screaming of a White Christmas October Movie-thon. We are off to the land of beer and waffles. And that sounds like my kind of torture. We visit the Kingdom of Belgium to open some scary doors in the 2021 film Advent Calendar. And you can find it on YouTube, Amazon Prime Video, and Fandango. And if you know our festive fun fact, you can win. You can get one of our stickers. And, you know, Mark, I hate to say it, the most popular stickers are our sponsor ones and not our stickers. So we're running out of bun stackers and regurgipets.
So disappointing. Well, good night, Bob. Thanks for taking
us
through.
It's me and you.
Da, 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 da. It's me and you this Christmas. Da, 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 da.
Actually, we're done.
Done, done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over.
Over. This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.